Thank you for being here. We really are thankful for you being. We know the weather can do all kinds of crazy things, right? And give us the mentality, oh, I shouldn't get up and go. But you guys chose to be here, so thank you for choosing to be here. We're in this new teaching series called One Step at a Time. And the reason why is because at the beginning of the new year, everybody's trying to take steps to live a healthier life, or you've created some kind of goal or resolution, and so you're trying to take steps towards that. And then just as true as that is, in order for you to live a healthier life, there's steps that you have to take. In order for you to accomplish your goal, there's steps that you have to take. The same thing is true in our spiritual life. And that's why it's one step at a time, because your steps are either taking you closer to God or they're taking you further away from God. Today, here is a question that I want us to wrestle with, and that does the seemingly insignificant capture your attention? And here's what I mean by that. How many times, we could be driving down 295 or 95, and we see a car with a flat tire, and we just, we don't think anything about it. It's not that significant, we think. But how many times have we seen the car rolled over in the ditch, and well, that gets our attention, right? We turn and we look at that. Now, I wonder about that coworker at your work that just kind of seems a little bit down, doesn't really capture your attention. But then, if they told you that they were full of cancer, and they just had months to live, now that kind of captures our attention. Now, I wonder about your friends who share with you that, hey, I'm really struggling in my marriage. And in your mind, you think, well, this is just par for the course. We all kind of struggle in our marriage. But when they come to you and they say, hey, we filed for divorce, that captures your attention. When your friend tells you that they're struggling financially, but then when they come back to you and they say to you, hey, we're losing our house, that seems more significant. And you know what? Sometimes people, we struggle with just insignificant insignificance in our own life. Some people sit here this morning, and they think, I'm just insignificant. That person over there, now they're significant because they have a place of leadership. They have a place of authority. They have a place of power. They have wealth. They're significant. Me, I'm not so much significant. Does the seemingly insignificant capture your attention? We have come across events in our life. There are events in your life you could point to that at first didn't seem all that significant. But then as you look back on them, you think, whew, where would I be if I hadn't been there? And here's what I mean by that. Recently, a gentleman was sharing that when he was a young boy, his dad had planned to mow the tall grass. The tall grass had gotten really tall around the pond. And his plan was on that Saturday was to go mow that grass. But his father was interrupted because he had an unannounced guest, a friend who showed up, and they hadn't seen each other in a while. And so the father decides to kind of put that off for a day. And he goes and hangs out with this buddy of his, and they actually went fishing. Well, that gentleman who was sharing this story, he was a young boy, and he hadn't learned how to swim yet. And he was over by the pond on that Saturday. When the dad chose to not mow that grass and chose to mow it another day, seemingly insignificant. But that little boy, he lost his footing by the pond, and he actually slipped in, didn't know how to swim, and he was doing everything he could to get out. And what he remembers was that he was able to reach his hand out and grab that tall grass that hadn't been cut yet and pull himself out. What seems insignificant turned out to be something very significant. And the same thing has been true in your own life. We have those seemingly insignificant events that happen in our life that are really significant. And I think we're going to see this in the text. What you might deem as insignificant, God sees as significant. So take your Bibles and go to Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2, we're going to pick up our story in verse number 16. And just to remind you of where we left off last week, Moses is on the run. And while he's on the run for his life. He's trying to escape Pharaoh. And on this map up here, I want you to see where he goes. You see in the upper left-hand corner, this lower Egypt, or the upper top right corner, right? And there's Egypt. Here's where he's coming from. And he goes all the way over to Midian, where that red circle is there on the map. Some 280 miles he goes. Why? Why would he travel that far? Because he's trying to escape the authority, the jurisdiction, if you will, of Pharaoh. So that's why he has to go so far. And he, last week, we found him. We left the story off with him at a well. Now today we're going to pick up this story. While he's sitting there at a well, these seven girls come and draw water for their father's flock. So Exodus chapter 2 and verse number 16. And now the priest of Midian had seven daughters who came as usual to draw water to fill the water troughs for their father's flock. I just want to stop and make sure we understand context here. The priest of Midian. So we want to ask ourselves first, who are the Midianites? These people in Midian. They are actually descendants of Abraham. So they're connected to Abraham. Not all of them were Yahweh followers, meaning they didn't all follow God. But we know that they did. And here's how we know this. Because we see two names show up here for the priest of Midian. We see Reuel, which means friend of God. And then he also goes by Jethro, which means excellence or abundance. This is all the same person. When it says the priest of Midian, when we hear the daughters of Reuel, and when we hear Jethro, all the same person. It's this priest of Midian, and he is a God worshiper because he's a friend of God. So he's worshiping Yahweh. So here's Moses sitting at that well. These seven, the priest of the priest's daughters, Jethro's daughters, show up at the well and they're drawing water. But some other shepherds came and they chased those daughters away. And so Moses jumped up and rescued the girls from the shepherds, and then he drew water for their flocks. Will you notice that Moses jumped up and rescued the girls? I think this is, so many times we think some insignificant things in our life, but they are common themes that pop up, and God uses those things to get our attention. Remember when Moses was in Egypt, he saw some injustice happening, and he was very passionate about justice happening. And so what's he do? He goes and he takes care of it in his own manner. He handles it the wrong way, but he sees an injustice and he goes after it. Why? Because that's in him. He has this bent towards justice. And then we also know that the very next day that this theme continues to run in him, where he's a rescuer, where he wants to make things right. And there's the two Hebrew people who are having this fight. One of them started the fight. Moses grabs the guy, pulls him off, and is like, "Why are you doing this?" He's a rescuer. It's in him. He finds himself some 280 miles away. And what's he doing again? He's rescuing. I'm bringing this out because there are some things, some themes that run in your life that seemingly are insignificant. You feel like they're insignificant, but they're really significant because God uses those themes in your life to call you to use them for him. And so I would say, pay attention to what you feel like is insignificant. Those could be some very significant things. And for you, understanding your wiring, understanding how God wants to use you. And what we know is that because we know the end of the story, God is using this thing in Moses who wants to rescue people. He calls them. He's going to call Moses to go and rescue his people. The story goes on in verse 18. And when the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked, "Why are you back so soon today?" They said, the girls responded with this, well, an Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. So obviously this implies a couple of things. One, that this wasn't the first time. It was like, Dad, you know those shepherds and how they, you know, want us to go last and they want to cut in front, right? Well, there's this Egyptian. So Moses is still dressed that they suppose that he's an Egyptian. Why? Because that's the way he wore his clothes. So they're thinking that he's Egyptian. They had no idea that he was a Hebrew. And so the father... Or the girls tell him that he drew water for us and he watered our flocks. And so the dad is like, well, where is he? And why did you leave him there? And then he says, invite him to come and eat with us. Now stop and think about so many times of what we would feel like an invite is insignificant. But this really turned out to be very significant in the life of Moses, because Moses accepts the invitation, and what we know, because the story goes on and says that he settled down there, and as he settled down there, he ends up marrying one of Jethro's daughters, Zipporah. That simple invite in Moses' life led to something very significant in the life of Moses. I wonder what a simple invite to that coworker to have lunch with you, what that could turn into. That simple invite to just sit down with somebody, introduce yourself to them. Hey, students, if you are in a classroom somewhere, I wonder what it looked like for you. Just a simple invite. You know that person's name, but you know you've never talked to them. And you just went and invited them into, quote, your group. What if you invited that student to your lunch table? What if in these classrooms, when you guys are in your children's ministry classes, what if you invited another one of the students in that classroom to come over for dinner with you? Of course, you got to ask your parents, right? But that simple invite could be so meaningful. Adults in the room, what if you tapped the person in front of you and said, "Hey, my name is Rick. What are you doing for lunch today?" A simple invite. You never know what could happen. You say, "Rick, this is New England. We don't do that." Well, I'm saying a simple invite could turn out to be something very significant in a person's life. And God would call us to be involved in other people's life, to invite people into our life. It was several years ago, but Mike and Trudy Demers, a family here at our church, they had a new family show up in their neighborhood. Brand new family. And they wouldn't be there long. They would only live there for 4 months. And they were like, "We're out of there. We're not living in Warwick. We're moving back to Cranston," right? But in those four months, Mike and Trudy Demers would go and invite them to come to our trunk or treat. And again, this is several years ago. They have three boys. They're all very young. They come and they go to our trunk or treat that they have. And that simple invite turned out to where now that family calls this their home. Their kids are all involved in our children's ministry and youth ministry now. And in fact, the mother works in our children's ministry. And the father this weekend, you know where he's at? He's at Camp Berea. And he is pouring his life into other students. Why? All because of a simple invite where a new person showed up into a neighborhood and they were invited. And now Bill is at Camp Berea and he's building relationships with students, letting them know that they matter to God. All because of a simple invite. Something that might seem insignificant turned out to be very significant. And as a result of that, who knows the impact that's happening both in the lower wing with Sonia working with young children and then her husband working with the students. That's meaningful. That is significant. Well, the story goes on. It says, later, she gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, for he explained, "I have been a foreigner in a foreign land." Years pass. Moses gives us the abbreviated version here. So years pass. Most historians believe we're talking like 40 years have passed. in round numbers. And so the king of Egypt has died. The Israelites continue to groan under the burden of slavery. Don't forget, that's where Moses left. He left Egypt, and those people were being oppressed down there. For 40 years, they are being oppressed. They are pleading with God through prayer. They cried out for help to God, and their cry rose up to God. And notice this, God heard their groaning. It's been 40 years, though. Now, come on, you and I know that if we were praying about something for 40 years and we saw no movement, you know what we'd be thinking? We'd be thinking, where are you, God? We'd be thinking, God's not hearing our prayer. We get all angst when God doesn't hear our prayer in a week, right? But what about a month? A month turns into a year, and that year turns into years. This is exactly what's happening. But here's what we can hold on to from this, that God heard their groaning. He hears your prayers. Even when it feels like that there's no movement happening, what we cannot deny is that God is working out His plan. And in the background, what's happening in the background is He's preparing. God is preparing a rescuer just for the people of Israel, just for their cry. He's preparing. He's making something happen when we think nothing is happening. My question is where is our, does your trust go that deep? Does your trust go to where God, you stop trying to control it and you're trusting that God is going to control it? Because this is where we have to be. But God heard their groaning. And when it says He remembered His covenant, don't read it like it's like, oh, God forgot something. No, that's not what He's mean. He understood. He knew exactly with what His covenant. He knew that He was working out this plan. And He remembered His promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And He looked down on the people of Israel. And He knew that now was the time. Now was the time to make His call. Moses had been prepared for this very moment, and we see it in chapter 3. One day, Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, and which would become known to Moses as the mountain of God. Why? Because this would be the place where Moses would have an encounter with God, and God would become so, oh, very real. This would be one of those memorial moments, and he now nicknames this mountain, this region, this area as the mountain of God. I wonder, do you have any mountain of God? You know, I shared with you last week, I have one of those mountains of God is that little tiny two-seater kitchen table in our apartment at 67 and a half Brooks in Pontiac, Michigan when I was in Bible college, and that moment that God showed up. Do you have those kinds of moments? He desires to have those kinds of moments with you. There, at that mountain of God, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement, and though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. Well, it wasn't amazing that there was a burning bush. This was like one of those things that could happen every so often. You know, have you ever been out at night, looked up in the sky, it's dark, and you see one of those falling stars? Every time you look out there, you don't see one, right? But every once in a while, you'll get to see one. For whatever reason, man, it seems like it always happens at this time with me. I'll be in front of CCR, I'll be coming home from this place, and it's dark, it's late, and I'm making a U-turn in front of CCRI in Warwick, and I'm headed down Main Ave, and as I look up there over the Crown Plaza, I'll just catch a shooting star. This just happened like 2 weeks ago to me, and I was on the phone with Zoe, and I was like, oh, there's a shooting star. I saw another one, right? Well, that's kind of like what would happen here. Every so often, you would see this happen out in the middle of the desert. And what Moses did, though, this was different. This one was different. It caught his attention. What seemed insignificant became very significant because it wasn't burning up. And so what he does, he was amazed at this, and he's asking the question, why isn't that bush burning up? And he takes steps in the direction. He continues to go towards that bush. And the closer he got and almost there, then all of a sudden God from heaven, and it says, and when the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called out to him from the middle of the bush, and he called by name, and he said, Moses, Moses. He calls out of something that seems insignificant, but now it becomes very significant because God is in the middle of the insignificant. I wonder if God's in some of those conversations that you have at work. I wonder if God is in some of the conversations as people share with you their heart, if He is right there in the middle of that. I just want us to stop and think about this. I think every Christ follower, I think every one of you would agree to this, that the Bible is really clear that we are all created in the image of God. The imago Deo, that His image is stamped inside every living human being. That there's this peace of God. Not everybody is a Christ follower. Not everybody is a child of God. No, that's not what I'm saying. But everybody has this image of God in them because they're created in God's image. If this is true, then that means your interactions with every person is significant. The way that you interact with other people is so very significant, because they have a piece of God. They have the image of God in them. Their ability to love, their ability to want justice, whether they're Christ followers or not, their ability to want to see justice and love others and have good things happen, that is that image of God, that piece of God that's in them. I wonder how you and I respond to the people who are made in the very image of God, who have very different views of life than you do. Can we just talk about how divisive 2020 is going to be, and as the closer we get to November, how it's just going to become more and more ugly. But I wonder, no matter your political view, I wonder if in every conversation that you have with every one of those people, that you would see the image of God in them and that you would respond to them in respect. I'm not saying we agree with everybody. That's not what I'm saying. Do not hear me say that. But what I am saying is, in the way that you respond to them, that you could show the love of Christ. Not agree with them. I'm not saying that. Of course, we all have our own different opinions about politics. But I wonder if it could be different this year. I wonder if the Christ followers could respond with respect and honor because of that peace of God that's in the other person. And let's not let this year become so ugly. Let's not let your social media posts become so ugly. Respond as though they are a human being and that they have the image of God in them. And we all need to carry this out with every person. That person that you walk by that you know has a past, instead of being disgusted by that, what if you couldn't see the image of God in them and know that God loves them and God calls you to love them as well? He responds with, "Here I am." God calls him by name. God knows your name. And he calls you by name. And Moses, he said, and then Moses does this. He's like, "Here am I," or "Here I am." But it didn't stop with just words with Moses. It goes on, "Don't come any closer," the Lord warned. He says, "Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground." Contextually, there's three or four different things that could be going on here with this idea of taking off your sandals. The one that really resonated with me was in this Hebrew, in their culture, it was a sign of reverence. It was a sign of fully surrender and submission to God for you to take off your shoes and what you're saying. What Moses is, he's just not saying with words, here I am. He's actually demonstrating, here I am, by taking off his sandals. And as he approaches there, what he's saying is, I come under your authority. I submit to you, God. I surrender to you. And I wonder how many Christ followers in this room need to respond, not just with words, here I am, but you need to respond with action. There are some lifestyle changes that you need to make because you need to take them off and leave them at the foot of the cross. There are some changes in your life, and here has been my prayer also this week. I've been praying that the Holy Spirit of God would tap every Christ follower on the door of their heart, and that He would put into your mind, you, that you would know what that means in your life. For you to actually surrender, to submit, to come under the authority of a holy God. Notice this is holy ground. We sang earlier about a holy God. I think so many times we have forgotten about the holiness of God. The only way that you and I are able to approach God is because of the cross and what Jesus did for us on the cross. It was there on the cross that He rescued us from our sin. And because of that, we get to come to this holy God. Because of the gospel, we get to come to God and call Him our Father. But we get to show up in His presence, and He gets to show up inside of us because of the cross. And this morning, some of us are living in a way that you know isn't pleasing, and you need to take it off. You need to stop just saying, God, oh yeah, God, what is it that you, oh, I'll do that. But it never, you never do anything. You never take any steps towards God. What is it that you need to take off so that you can actually get closer to God? In a moment, the worship team is going to come, and I'm going to ask you to respond to this very idea. Why they just sing a song over us, that you would ask God, God, what is it in me? That even here, even this morning, that on the 19th of January, that this time would become this holy mountain of God with you. That you would have this interaction with God. That you would act on what God is calling you to do. So take out your connection card. And the very first next step says this. It says, I want to respond like Moses. Here I am. But I know that there are things I need to take off. Pray for me as I take steps in the direction of surrender. Maybe that's exactly where you find yourself. And what I'm asking you to do is in a moment, they're going to sing part of this song. And instead of you singing, I want you just to receive it. I want you to receive the words. I want you to stay seated. I want you to be reflective. I want you to ask God, God, what is it that I need to take off? Make it oh so real to me. Then just have this burning bush moment with God. Right there in your seat. You say, well, Rick, there's nothing significant about this place. No, God is here. And it is significant because God is here. He wants to meet with you. The other next step on there says this. It says, I want to see with the eyes of God and see the significance and the seemingly insignificant things around me. Maybe when you go to work, you go to school, you're saying, God, give me eyes to really hear in the insignificant things that are happening, what I think are insignificant. God, show me the significance in them. Show me where you are in them. Maybe we need those kinds of eyes. I know I do. And then the last step on there says, when I pray, I feel like it goes nowhere. Please pray that I am not so distracted by my own problems that I miss the very presence of God. You know how easy it would be? Because I just envision myself in the place of those Hebrew people that are being oppressed for 40 stinking years. Can you imagine? 40 years, and you would be saying, God, where are you? But God would be saying this. He would be saying, I'm right there in the midst of your problems, in the midst of the bad stuff that's happening. I'm right there, because remember what Psalms 46 says? He says, I am your shelter. I'm your refuge. I am your help in a time of trouble. That's who God is. Maybe you're missing it. You're so focused on your circumstance, so focused on the problems around you, that you're missing the presence of God. Maybe you just need new eyes to see that burning bush, to see God right there in the middle of it. And so, Father, please let us hear from you through this song. While we're reflecting, God, may you give us this burning bush moment just to spend with you here, please.